You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for the good team?
Jerry DePoto will join me in a half hour. Linda Cohn at 9 o'clock this morning. So it's going to be a fun hour or so. Here on the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle. We've gotten to know Moore a little bit better today, and I've managed to avoid vomiting after hearing the mouse in the salad story. That was pretty disgusting. Yeah, I'm still not like fully over that. So if I'm a little off here for the rest of the day, I'm sorry. I'm still like there's a pit in my stomach.
Payback for your vomiting in the porta potty story.
That was gross.
Earlier.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's fair. I guess I own that one. I'll deserve that. We were kind of looking through the news today. Two stories that caught our eye, not necessarily specific to sports, but seeing that Kanye West is officially changing his name, Justin, it's now going to be
Ye.
How many names has he had?
Just Ye. I think this is it. Just Kanye. Yeah.
So he never. Well, okay. So Kanye is Ye.
There's like Yeezy and Ye. Yeah, there's stuff for his clothing.
But changing his name is this.
But this is
the first time.
Okay, got it. And then Facebook is maybe going to change their name. They're going to do a rebrand. There's a possibility they'll end up as Meta.
Something like that, yeah.
That can't be.
Metaverse, there's a couple being thrown around.
I was hoping that after all this, he would finally go back and add the. Now they would once again be the Facebook.
Yeah, the opposite of the drop the.
Exactly.
It's cleaner.
Yeah.
It's already muddied and dirtied up. Let's just get right back to
that. Let's roll with it. So we thought we would spend a little time thinking about name changes. Are you going to play a little trivia for us?
Yeah, so I thought I would test you, Salk, and you, Maura, on your memory and name recognition skills.
You're going down, Salk.
I don't know how well you're going to be in this, but I'm going to read you a name of a person in the world that you can recognize. The world will recognize their face.
Okay.
Maybe not their birth name. I will also give you a one-word hint to see if you can tell me who they are known as today.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
I'm going to start with an easy one.
RuPaul.
Real name... Nicholas Kim Coppola.
Oh, I know that one.
You know that one.
I do, yes.
Maura, do you know this one?
I think so.
Okay. I'm 100% sure I know that.
Okay, so that's an easy one. You see how the game's being played now?
So that's Nick Cage, who is a
cop. In the police department, I'm in the middle of a homicide investigation. Try to get my prescription, please.
I love Nick
Cage.
He's
a Coppola. He's related to Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, he changed his name to dissociate himself with his uncle, Godfather director Francis Ford Coppola. Okay.
Who directed him in Rumblefish.
Never heard of it. Never seen it. Okay. Up next, real name, Karen Elaine Johnson.
Ooh.
Your hint? Psychic.
Karen Elaine Johnson, psychic. Miss Chloe?
It's Miss Cleo, isn't
Cleo,
it?
Cleo, that's what I meant.
Miss Chloe.
Mrs. Cleo.
Maura, your guess?
Ooh. Yeah, I need another hint.
All right. That's it. You'll get one word. Here it is.
What it is. He's in between worlds. You know, it happens sometimes that the spirit gets yanked out so quick that the essence still feels like it has work to do.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, that's Whoopi for sure. From Ghost.
Karen,
all right.
Huh?
Up next.
What was her name?
Karen Elaine Johnson? Karen Elaine Johnson. Whoopi Goldberg.
Didn't know that.
She said it was because when you get a little gassy, you've got to let it go. So people used to call me, you're like a whoopee cushion.
How did she end up with a Jewish last name?
I don't know. Okay, moving on. Real name, Mark Sinclair Vincent. The hint? Ignition.
Oh, okay.
Mark Sinclair
I've got a
Vincent.
Guess.
What's your guess?
Vin Diesel?
Salk?
R. Kelly?
I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
Yeah.
Nothing else matters. Not the mortgage, not the store, not my team. And for those 10 seconds or less... I'm free.
Mm. Vin Diesel. He changed it because he was a bouncer at New York nightclubs to earn himself some extra cash. So it turned into Vin Diesel from Mark Sinclair Vincent. All right,
I thought it was going to be the remix to Ignition. That's why I went with R. Kelly.
No, Ignition, I was thinking Fast and the Furious. Diesel,
yes.
Fuel.
Okay. Makes sense. All right.
Real name. This one I hope is easy for you. Norma Jean Mortensen.
Oh, yeah.
You got that one?
Is that Marilyn Monroe?
It is Marilyn Monroe. Yeah. That's okay. That one's quick. I'm just making some of these easy, some of these a little bit harder.
I knew she was Norma Jean. I didn't know the last name.
Okay, up next, Eric Marlin Bishop. Your hint?
You're going to need it.
Juice. Any guesses?
Eric Marlin Vincent?
No, Eric Marlin Bishop.
No. Well, that didn't help. Juice?
Juice.
Does anybody know this?
Maura?
No.
You guys gonna give up?
I got nothing.
Okay. Jamie Foxx.
Oh, wow. All right.
Jamie Foxx, Blame It on the Juice. He apparently changed his name because he was starting out in comedy. He noticed that female comics were called first to perform during open mic nights, so he chose a gender-neutral name.
Okay.
Up next, this one should be also easy for you, Reginald Kenneth Dwight. Reginald Kenneth Dwight. Your hint? Crown.
These are hard. Reginald Kenneth Dwight.
Reginald
Heck
Kenneth
of a name.
Dwight. Nothing?
Crown. I don't know.
Maura?
Can I phone a friend?
Oh, wow.
Elton John.
Oh, jeez.
I didn't know that was his name.
You didn't know that was Elton John?
I didn't recognize that. I know Elton John, and I know some songs. I didn't recognize that song.
I'm still standing. All right, one more.
One more.
Last one.
Real name, Stephanie Angelina Germanotta.
Oh. Angelina Jolie?
Oh, sorry. I missed a word. Stephanie Joanne Angelina Germanotta. Or Germanotta? I could be saying that wrong. Your hint? Meat.
Lady Gaga.
Yeah!
There it is.
I think you win.
Did I?
Yeah, yeah,
of course I did.
One.
You know, I have a great memory, Moore. I think that's what we've learned here today. All right, good stuff.
Kanye, good stuff. Thanks for inspiration.
Yes, that was fun. All right, Elton John. I was hoping we were going to get Odorous Arungus or one of the guys from Gwar. You didn't want to use any of those guys?
I forgot about Odorous Arungus from Gwar.
Well, he changed his name from whatever it was to Odorous Arungus, and so I thought maybe... Well, I don't know if it was legal or
these
not.
These are legal name changes.
Oh, okay. Those are all legal name changes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Good stuff.
Technically, I guess maybe they're not all, but these are stage names. Any point is... That's what they're known for.
Good point here. Moore needs to watch the movie Sing. Yes. Have you ever seen Sing? It's a good movie. Made me cry. Like most other, like every other animated movie, Sing definitely made me cry. The Chris Carson thing is a little concerning, if we could just come back to it here for a moment. You know, talking to Jake the other day and then talking to Brock about it, it does feel a little cursed. It does feel like since Marshawn and since, you know, he owned that position here for so long, everyone wants to kind of like say you don't need running backs until you don't have one, until you don't have any consistency at the position. And then it's like, how come you can't find somebody to play that role? And such a shame when you are Pete Carroll in this offense and what you're trying to do with the ball on offensively, it really has become a bit of a challenge for them. How different do you think the Seahawks would be over the last, let's say, 5 years if they had had a legitimate running back who took the majority of their carries?
Like a Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
Ooh, man.
I mean, maybe Derrick Henry's maybe an extreme example because he's the best in the game, but take it even like a half a notch below Derrick Henry. But the consistency, healthy every year, right? 1,000-yard seasons, et cetera. How would they be if they just had a consistent presence similar to what Marshawn Lynch was? Marshawn was generally not the best in the game, but he was in that conversation.
Well, we've had a glimpse with Carson, right? In 2018, 2019, he had back-to-back over 1,000-yard rushing seasons.
And still managed to get hurt, though, in both of those years, right? And missed a little bit of time. Like, how would they be if
But like one or two games those years. So we have seen kind of what that could look like with him.
Didn't it look better?
Well, what happened at the end of those years?
Well, yeah, not much. Was he healthy, though? I think he missed one of those games in the postseason, right? They got there. Was it 2019 they finally got there, and then he and Penny were both hurt? So, yeah, you have seen it, but you haven't seen it carry all the way through and allow them to kind of do what they did during the regular season on into the postseason. That's my memory of it. You can definitely, like, call me out if I'm wrong on that. But I'm pretty sure Carson wasn't healthy for at least one of those two postseason runs.
Because the 2019, it was the Eagles wild card, and then the next was the divisional against the Packers, right? 2019?
Was that Dallas or the Packers?
I think 2019 was the Packers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the year before was Dallas. Yeah, I don't remember which year it was, but I'm pretty sure he wasn't in there for at least one of those games. It just it's a little scary when you hear the whole neck thing. And obviously, you know, when Jake mentions that, I'll play for you again.
I understand they're still trying to figure out what's going on with him and everything, but the fear within the building, I'll just tell you this right now with Chris Carson, the fear within that building is that this thing is deteriorating for him, and if they can't settle his stinger issue down, his, you know, with the nerves in his neck and all that, that they're fearful. You know, I don't want to, you know, sound the alarms or anything, but, you know, Cliff Averill and Cam Chancellor have those same issues.
Yeah.
And when you're running back with the physicality of Chris Carson, that's a problem. That's a big problem.
I don't want to hear those two names, obviously. You know, two guys whose careers were cut way too short because of issues in their neck and that seemed like stingers and seemed like things you could kind of get over and ultimately were not. Ultimately, were career killers for both Cam and Cliff. The last thing you want is Chris Carson to be added to that list. He is a good player when he plays well. He signed a two-year, what, $10.4 million deal, only $5.5 million guaranteed. So it's not going to be like a franchise ruiner if Chris Carson isn't able to go. But it's certainly a huge concern. We saw that they ended up working out a couple of running backs yesterday. And clearly this is an issue for the Seahawks, right? Pete thought he was going to be good to go, and now he's not. You know, Chris Carson's a tough dude, and he wants to run you over. And I love his big physical style. But if he's not able to go and he's not able to go consistently, whether it's Rashad Penny finally emerging and hopefully being healthy, and I know that's a shot in the dark, or Alex Collins, like at some point, Pete Carroll wants to have this style of offense. He needs the right guy to do it. And it's not for lack of resources. They spent some money on Carson. They drafted Penny with their first round pick. Just didn't work. You got to get the right guy.
Are you surprised that he hasn't gone all in and traded for a marquee running back name?
A little bit. I mean, that's how they got Marshawn. They found somebody who was disgruntled somewhere else, but was already showing he was a premier back in the NFL. They just do that again, right? Running backs become available all the time. Yeah, I am a little surprised that they haven't reached out and tried to get a running back that was already having some success somewhere else.
Why not get a big fullback?
They don't seem, and that's the other thing I don't understand. Like, if you are so invested in running the ball, why not use the fullback more? They don't seem to have any interest in it. And yet, when Mike Robb was here and Coleman after that, they seemed to be much more successful running the ball. You know, all that stuff confuses me. I wish I had an answer for it, and I don't. I don't know why they do it that way. It's 8:15. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, it used to be Jake Locker that had Seahawks fans pining, at least those who had already been Husky fans and had watched Jake while he was here. Well, now it's Jacob Eason, and he's here. He's arrived. He's a Seahawk. He was claimed yesterday off of waivers from Indy. The former Lake Stevens and UW star had been drafted by the Colts last year in the fourth round. He's played in just one professional game, completed two of his five passes, did throw a pick. He's going to be the backup, it looks like, this week with Jake Luton and Danny Etling both on the practice squad. Look, I appreciate the Seahawks doing everything they can to try to improve the roster and bring in players that could help, but I also struggle to see how this is going to help. It's funny. Eason's numbers in college are actually a lot better than I would have guessed, and when I went back and looked, look, 64% of his passes completed, touchdown-interception ratio of 23-8, a quarterback rating of almost 144. It's not bad. But the team finished 8-5. They were 4-5 in the conference. They didn't play well. They were disappointing. And if you watched the games, he just seemed to struggle. Errant passes, hard to catch balls, poor decisions on when to stay, when to escape the pocket. It did not go well for Jacob Eason while he was in Washington. Hopefully it'll go better as the Seahawks backup. The team is going to get back to practice today after an extra day off. Because of Monday Night Football, all eyes, I think, will be on Rashad Penny. He's said to be fully healthy, according to Pete Carroll. Ready to take on a bigger role this week. Might need to also, based on the way Jake Heaps was talking about Chris Carson's neck. When he was talking about stingers and mentioned the names Cliff Averill and Cam Chancellor and thinking about the way their careers came to an end. Yeah, that's got me and I would think everybody worried. Team did work out a pair of running backs this week. B.J. Emmons and Dexter Williams. Thursday night football. Oh, my bad.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, I'll just continue it. That was my fault. BJ.
You did a little hand motion.
I started to give you, and then I realized there was more. I was just going to remind people Thursday night football tonight. Beat up Browns team without Baker Mayfield. They will take on the Denver Broncos. All systems go for the Kraken. Got a little rest. Hopefully now a little time to practice, which is something they've been missing on that long five-game road trip to start the year. Saturday, they will open up at home Climate Pledge Arena. We did get to see plenty of pictures from inside the arena over the last day or two. It looks special. Looks spectacular. I love all the glass that they have inside. I think it gives it kind of that indoor-outdoor feel. It should be sweet. And even small touches like the living green wall looks cool, adding Northwest character. Based on what we heard, though, from those who attended the Foo Fighters show, concession prices going to be a little steep. shouldn't really surprise anybody who saw how much construction prices rose while they were building it. Do I say, is Coldplay tonight?
22nd.
Oh, okay, so that's tomorrow night. Okay, so you're going to have back-to-back. Tomorrow night, Coldplay, and then the game on Saturday. NBA, and of course the building will be NBA-ready as well. They tipped off over the last couple nights to start their season. Knicks win in double OT last night. Lakers lost their first game, as did the Blazers, who fell to the Kings yesterday.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
It is amazing how one pitch can change everything, but that seems to be the way the ALCS is working. The Red Sox sure look to be headed to the ninth inning at home, trying to take a commanding 3-1 lead in the ALCS through a pitch that looked like a strike. It was called a ball, and since then the Astros have outscored them 16-1. 16-1 in two games, not even. A game in an inning. Seven runs in that ninth inning, nine more yesterday. So would things have been different if the pitch was called a strike? Yeah, I guess so. Or maybe the Astros would have won later on in that game in extra innings, and yesterday still could have gone the same. Who knows? Either way, Houston's now up 3-2 in that series, game six tomorrow night, 5 o'clock. And the Braves are crashing the party. They got the Dodgers on the brink of elimination. They win 9-2 last night. Gigantic night from Eddie Rosario. 4-for-5. Two home runs, four runs driven in. That's a pretty good day at the office. They've got a chance to clinch tonight. First pitch just after 5 o'clock, and what a story that would be. Eliminating the Dodgers and the Giants. I mean, two teams that look like complete stars. I mean, obviously the Dodgers and all the money they spend, the Giants and the kind of season they had, and for both of them to be by the wayside while the Atlanta Braves head to the World Series. Without Acuna, too. Just unbelievable, some of the things we've seen in what has been a very good, fun-to-watch postseason this year. Those are the things you need to know. We do that every hour, quarter past the hour.
A lot of texts about that. I know Nick Chubb. I get it. Like, right? We got Penny over Nick Chubb.
Mm-hmm.
But if currently in the league, does Nick Chubb hurt right now, too?
He is, yes.
So he's going to be out this week.
So he's not playing Thursday. Okay. So who are some of the most durable guys in the last 5 years? I know there's only been
Derrick Henry's missed like two games in his career, which is truly amazing considering the workhorse he is and all of that.
I mean, I know McCaffrey gets hurt all the time. What about like Dalvin Cook?
McCaffrey was durable. It's like once it hits,
yeah,
it seems like it can be consecutive for a lot of guys.
Dalvin Cook's been out a ton.
Alvin
Kamara has missed a little bit, but overall he's been pretty durable.
And maybe because he's more of that like multi-featured kind of back who does a lot of different things. It is a good point. I mean, it does seem to be hard to find great, durable running backs. I mean, Marshawn was that until he had the back problems, but he mostly played through that stuff. I mean, Marshawn was awfully durable while he was here. But it's interesting. I mean, think about the years between Sean Alexander and Marshawn Lynch. They were lean also. Julius Jones and, you know, some of the guys, Leon Washington, some of the guys they brought in. Justin Forsett. I mean, like, it is hard to find. It's funny. Running backs may feel like they are a little interchangeable, but it's hard to find a good one. And if you have one, you don't want to let it go. I mean, they really can be a huge value added in an NFL that does not ascribe a tremendous amount of value to the position.
When did Aaron Jones enter the league?
That's a good question. You know what? The same year as Chris Carson. I think they were in the... He was also late, if I'm not mistaken.
2017?
Yeah, I think he was sixth round and Carson was seventh, something like that. Or he was fifth and Carson was seventh, something like that. I think it's the same year. He's been good and reasonably healthy, right?
I just really like him.
He's missed a little bit of time over the last couple of years too, but nothing crazy. I mean, but almost all of them have. Derrick Henry's the anomaly.
He really is a beast and just such a huge dude. He's so much fun to watch. I just love him. He was part of a fire and lightning thing, though, or a thunder and lightning thing, right, when he was at Alabama. Wasn't it him and was it T.J. Yeldon or something like that?
I don't know. I don't remember
I
that.
I think it was. I mean, like, I don't think they just had him. I'm pretty sure they used him a lot, but they also had T.J. Yeldon, who did a lot of the running also. He ended up going, I think, to the Jaguars and didn't do much in the NFL. But, you know, Alabama always had at least two running backs. Henry's just been unbelievable. Physical freak, man. To be that large and that fast and that healthy and to run the ball as much as he has, that is not the norm. Like, it's hard to compare anybody to him. That's not the norm.
And he outruns people is the thing. It's not like he's crazy. Running people over. He literally outruns and pushes them out of the way, he's still the fastest running back.
That's a good
back.
Point. Frank Gore has been certainly the most healthy, like, longest running back. I mean, that guy has just played forever. So, yeah, some really good answers. Did I have the right name, Maura? Were you looking it up from Alabama?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out. I'm seeing Dion Lewis and Kenyon Drake.
Oh, okay. He might have been paired with Eddie Lacy. It's hard to remember some of these things.
Was Mac Jones his quarterback?
That might be for the Titans. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out
all
who
right.
we'll
it was.
We'll
figure it out.
College.
We'll get it all together and we'll get you that information. It's important.
This is a good question. Was Derrick Henry close to being a bust the first couple of years in the NFL?
Well, they didn't use him as much, it seems like. They kind of tried to like job share it for him, and it didn't work as well as they wanted it to. So no, I don't know if he was close to being a bust, but it did take him a little while to really turn into Derrick Henry. That's for sure.
I think it was Kenyon Drake.
Okay. Well, see, you know, it's close.
You mean you don't have all of
Alabama's running backs memorized? Don't worry about the accuracy. It was close enough. Hey, let's talk to Jerry DePoto. Last week, as we were talking to him, he was heading off to his reunion. I know he's had an opportunity to be watching some of the incredible postseason we've seen. I want to ask him about Mitch Haniger's Players Tribune article. We got a lot to talk to Jerry about. We'll do it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
It was good news as we wait for Jerry DePoto, who should be joining us just any moment here. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle. And Linda Cohn will be with us in a half hour. Talk some hockey with her, getting ready for the premiere on Saturday night of the Kraken at home at Climate Pledge Arena. It was nice seeing the Mariners linked to some big names this morning. I was reading through Buster Olney. I guess it was yesterday, but we were reading it this morning. Buster Olney's article, which is talking about the big five shortstops. He said he calls them the $1 billion shortstop class this year. And who are we talking about? Corey Seager and Carlos Correa and Marcus Semien, Trevor Story and Javier Baez. Those five players should end up making at least $1 billion combined in contracts handed out this offseason. And he's got the Mariners right there as being in on essentially all of them, right? I don't know whether Corey Seager is a legitimate possibility for some obvious reasons, but I do think that they should be in on at least three, if not all four of those guys, and trying to figure out what the best fit is for them. In all likelihood, they wouldn't end up playing shortstop here, right? Their need much, much more so defensively is at second and at third base, especially as Kyle Seager in all likelihood departs here in the offseason. But, you know, Trevor Story could certainly play third base for you. Marcus Semien ended up playing second base last year for Toronto because of Bo Bichette, right? So there's no reason that they can't move. Javier Baez could certainly play second or third. Right. So as you're thinking about the options here and how the Mariners are going to play this offseason, I was actually more intrigued by some of the teams that they said were possibilities to compete with. It's not just the Yankees and Dodgers. I mean, that's probably going to take out one or two. But then it's like the Tigers and Rangers.
And you compete with on money, not compete with another term.
You're just competing with them like
on the market, on the trademark.
They're the other teams that might be interested in players like that. I'll take your chances there. And see how you do against those two.
And this also is under the assumption that JP stays at short.
I think that's a pretty likely assumption, right? Just given the leadership of the team and given the Gold Glove ability, like it's hard to imagine somebody else.
A backhanded way of being like, sorry, you got to move.
Right. I don't see them moving the Gold Glover. None of these guys are so great with the glove that you would have to move them. I mean, and certainly Story's got issues throwing the ball. So, yeah, I don't see that as necessarily being the way this would go. Are we ready for Jerry?
I think so.
Oh, awesome. Jerry, hello. Good morning. How are you?
I'm excellent, Mike. Thanks for having me.
How was the reunion? Did you have fun over the weekend?
I did. It was a blast. Got to see a lot of old friends and people I haven't seen in many years, and celebrate VCU baseball, which is a little more on the map than it was 30 years ago.
It's pretty cool. I assume you've been watching the postseason. It's been really an entertaining, I think, postseason. Watching the game the other day and the, you know, sort of missed strike three call in the ninth inning that went against Eovaldi, where do you stand on the whole robo-ump controversy? Would you want to see computers calling balls and strikes?
Yeah, I think there's some combination of, you know, the human element behind the plate in conjunction with the ABS that makes sense for baseball. We have the technology, it's there, and you know, if you can be accurate 100% of the time, then you should do that. And, you know, I think it's a benefit to the players, to the quality of the game. And I think the umpires are adapting and adjusting to the inevitability of that as well.
So you don't care. I mean, I don't have a good argument against not wanting robo-umps other than that I kind of just don't want them. But I always see like the, you know, a pitch where the pitcher clearly misses his spot and he pulls the catcher's glove halfway across and it sort of just nicks the top or the edge of the zone and it's usually called a ball because it's not a good pitch. You're okay with, you'd rather have those be called correctly than the missed calls. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I guess on this one, I'll flash back to a different lifetime. I threw plenty of good pitches that got hit really hard, and I threw plenty of hanging sliders that they missed. And, you know, I think I'll go to the school of sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And, you know, if it crosses through the strike zone and that's the way the ABS defines it, then I think that's fair. It's I can't imagine in other sports that there are not instances where, you know, a player experiences some type of success despite the fact he was probably trying to do something else. Yeah. And, you know, that's just part of the game.
The other thing I was wondering watching this postseason is just the usage of pitchers and starting pitchers pitching later in games and only going short times, relief pitchers, bullpen games. It sure seems like the traditional use of the pitcher has changed entirely in the postseason.
And especially over the last 2 years. And while I do think it's a developing trend, especially in the postseason, I think it is a developing trend in part because of what we're trying to deal with as an industry coming back from COVID. With the shortened 2020 season, abbreviated inning totals, what we're looking at this year with starting pitchers who last year threw 70 or 80 innings, this year we're ramping up their workload, you know, to 170, 180. You know, they're tired. And I think some of the what we're seeing now is strategy. Some of it is necessity to try to adapt to the world that we've been living in these last couple of years.
As you look at these four teams that are left, are there, and as a team that's trying to get there where they are right now, are there common themes that you notice about the way these four teams were built that you can use or take advantage of in some way?
Yeah, every one of them is a little bit different, and they're all pretty complete. And I wish I could tell you I could view the Mariners as a future Dodgers, where every player on the field seems to be an all-star. But you know, they're all loaded, and it just gives you a bar that you have to try to meet. And the one commonality among them is if you look at the core of those teams, there are a lot of players that started their careers there, either developing through their system or being acquired when they were young, and then they grow up with that group. And that's what we've tried to emulate here with the Mariners. And, you know, I look at it, I watch those teams, the Uriases and the Luxes and the Bellingers, and, you know, they've always been Dodgers. And we know the Astros with the Altuves and the Correas and Framber and Jordan. These guys have always been Astros. And I think that's something that we aspire to have as a core of players that came up together. And when they're ready to really flourish, they're familiar with one another and they play well together.
Did you have a chance to read what Mitch Haniger wrote in the Players Tribune?
I did. I loved it. Immediately sent him a text. And yeah, anything that is well thought out, that is heartfelt like that, I believe was heartfelt. That did not come in 30 seconds of reaction or, you know, emotionality. That was a well thought out from the heart piece. And I thought it was incredibly well done. And I thought Mitch gave us a little window into the way he thinks or where his mind is right now. And I thought it was refreshing. I sent him a simple text, amazing. You know, I thought it was really well done and it hit the heart. And I agree with him, frankly, on almost everything he said.
I love that he says, I hope the other teams in the league are reading this and they understand we're about to get after it in the offseason. We're coming for one of those playoff spots and more. I think that's a really almost kind of, you know, goosebump inducing kind of a quote. When we had talked about Mitch before the season ended, I know you had said, and I was asking you about the possibility of an extension. And I know it takes two parties to reach an extension. Does this give you some hope or optimism that maybe Mitch is interested in being here long term?
I've never not had hope that Mitch wants to be here long term. I believe that he enjoys playing here. I know he loves the city. And I know he loves his teammates. This is a, you know, it's a very close team emotionally. If I did have a sense as to whether an extension was possible, I wouldn't air it on the radio this morning. But I've always had the belief that this is where Mitch wants to be. And if that works out and we're able to come together on it somewhere down the road, then then that'll be a wonderful outcome for both of us.
I was reading Buster Olney. He was writing about the five big shortstops that are on the market this offseason. Seager, Correa, Story, Semien, Baez. Obviously, you have a shortstop, but a few of those, if not all of those players, could also play elsewhere in the infield. And he mentions the Mariners as being a possible suitor and in on a few of those. I know you're not going to tell us exactly what your plans would be, but when you go and look at a big, high-priced free agent acquisition like that, what qualities are you looking for to make sure you have so that you get it right?
Well, we want to know that the person fits in our clubhouse with our group, and you know every one of those players is a great player, and they all do it a little bit differently. And you know, for us, one of the key elements is we have a shortstop that we love, and you know, JP's our shortstop, and we feel like he is, you know, an anchor on our infield and an emotional leader for our team. So one of the things that's important to us is finding a player who is adaptable and willing to move around the field and maybe get a little uncomfortable. And there's some of those guys that already have done that in their career. Guys like Semien and Baez have done that. And, you know, that kind of selflessness is a big deal for us. And that also speaks well of how the player will fit in our clubhouse. But, you know, the combination of quality play, of high character, of leadership traits. And with all of those guys, you know, one thing that they bring to the table is they bring postseason experience. And, you know, that's also an element that we are not, I guess, we're not going to be dumb to this offseason. We know where we want to go, and the more we can add players who've been there, the better off we are.
What is the process like of wooing a big-name free agent like that? I mean, it's not somebody who's desperate for a job and hey, will you please sign me? I mean, I would assume almost have to make a pitch and start the process early. How do you go about that process?
It is. I mean, you are making a pitch. You're pitching that free agent on your city, on your organization, on what you have to offer. And I think, as with any player in our league, the thing that they will gravitate toward first is, what can you do to help me get better? Because every player, no matter how great they are, the reason why they're great is they're always striving to get better, and they want to know that you have systems and programs and coaches and high performance personnel that can help them take it to a different level. And, you know, and that's going to be part of the pitch. And, you know, we've had great practice with this in the past, I guess most notably during the recruitment of Shohei Ohtani. I've done this in past lifetimes where you get in front of the player and you reference all of the things your club has to offer. And then you empower the people around you, you know, the players on the team, the staff, you know, members of the community to help and really pitch in, because we're not just selling the Mariners, we're selling Seattle and the experience in Seattle. Because, you know, when you're talking about that type of quality of player, you're probably not talking about a contract that's going to land them here for a year.
Right.
So you're selling something considerably different than just a moment in time.
Well, maybe just print out the Mitch Haniger article and put it down there as you're trying to sell that. Hey, this is the kind of atmosphere we've built here. Look what Mitch just wrote. Let's come be a part of this thing, huh?
Or just have Mitch give him a ring and tell him.
There you go. Seriously.
What do they do, you know?
Hey, Mitch, need you. Make a phone call. Help me out a little here. This is good. As usual, Jerry, I feel like we could keep going, but we will do it again next week. Thanks for doing this throughout the offseason. Enjoy the postseason, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good, Mike.
All right, there you go. There's Jerry DePoto, who joins us every week Thursday at 8:30. And, hey, I will say that's a little bit more positive on the Mitch Haniger front, I think, than we'd heard before. And obviously, we're always reading into it. It's not like Jerry has said, we will, we won't, et cetera. But I felt like that was a positive step if you were somebody that thinks that Mitch Haniger should be here long term. And, you know, look, I'll read too much into it. He mentioned Semien and Baez. He didn't mention the other three. So I don't know whether that means anything, but I'll read a little into it. The Professor's next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton's Morning Drive, every morning at 8:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
I thought you saw a lot of good things out of offense. I think that was a very positive sign.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the Professor John Clayton.
Brought to you by Dubin Law Group.
It just amazes me. I give it credence, but not total credence.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Mike Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mike.
Jacob Eason is a Seahawk. Will he play?
No.
Okay. Will he be on the team in 3 weeks?
Yeah, he'll be on the team in 3 weeks. I mean, the question is going to be, is he going to be on the active roster or is he going to be on the practice squad? Yeah, they just picked up an available talent because, you know, it was funny because I know we talk about this with Bob and Dave a lot in the last week. You know, who are the best backup quarterbacks in the league? And you'd be surprised to see who's on the list as far as a top. Like, for example, Case Keenum, mm-hmm. who's going to start for Cleveland tonight, is considered the best. And if that's the case, there's not a lot of great backup quarterbacks available. And then, of course, you got Marcus Mariota. I mean, you've got, certainly Gardner Minshew.
Trey Lance?
No. I mean, because, again, I'm not counting the rookie future starters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not counting Mitch Trubisky and, you know, guys like that.
Why not Mitch Trubisky?
Was he any good as a starter?
No, I wasn't sure whether he counted as a backup. He counts as a backup, though, right?
Well, he counts as a backup, but again, we haven't seen him as a backup yet, so we don't count him. But again, I mean, here's a guy that, in Jacob, he does have throwing talent. He has been, he hasn't done well. But I think that, he'll be with the team because, again, you can think the fact that the Seahawks reached out and put him on the active roster. If they need the roster space, they can cut him and he'll go to the practice squad because I don't know if he's going to go anywhere else.
Mm. What's the deal? Is Deshaun Watson going to get traded to the Dolphins?
I think he is now.
That's nuts, huh?
No, it isn't. I mean, again, it's way late and smart by Houston because they're paying him $10.4 million to do nothing. And they've been ridiculous in asking for 3 first-round picks and 2 second-round picks. So now it's a matter, can they get something out of Miami that can satisfy them? If not, then he's going to have to sit for the rest of the season and just be a pain. So, and of course, I mean, the Dolphins right now are in big trouble. They're on a 5-game losing streak. They're 1-5. They're the third worst team in the league. And the thing that makes it even worse is that, they have the 3rd pick in the draft. Oh, guess what? They don't.
Right. They already dealt that.
Yeah, they dealt that to Philly in that 3-way trade. So it's like, this to me is kind of interesting to see. But I think they need to make a trade because, again, right now their season's a trash.
How do you go to your fan base, though, and say you've just traded for a guy in this climate and stemming from the Gruden stuff and the Washington mm-hmm. football team stuff and everything that Deshaun Watson is accused of right now?
Yeah.
How do you sell your fan base on that deal?
You sell him as he's the 5th best quarterback in the league or 6th best quarterback in the league for talent, and he is going to be allowed to play this year. Now, the case is not going to be going into next year probably until the spring, May, June, July, because they're not even going to depose him until February. And if that's going to be the case and he's going to be found guilty of whatever, not guilty legally with the police, but guilty with all the cases, then he'll get suspended next year. But at least you now have him for whatever, because he's on a long-term contract. Mm.
What's your level of concern right now on Chris Carson's neck?
Not major, but again, it's worrisome because, again, I mean, he's not going to be playing this week. He's on the injured reserve list, and it's one where if you can get something out of him this season, great. If not, then after the season, then you have to go a different direction.
Yeah, and what direction would that be? I mean, we're going to get another. Hopefully, we'll get a look at Rashad Penny to see whether there's anything in there and whether or not he can stay healthy. But we were just talking about it. There really haven't been, other than Derrick Henry, there haven't been a ton of consistently healthy marquee running backs in the NFL.
Now, if you go back to last year, and I could be wrong on this, but I know if I'm wrong by 1 or 2 players, is that Derrick Henry was the only back that was able to play 16 games. Mm. The starting running back. Everybody else had to miss 1, 2, 3, whatever number of games because, again, it's so physical a position. And it's like, other than Derrick Henry, nobody's able to handle more than 20 carries a game. Everybody's less than that. So it's just a very difficult position for anybody to stay healthy.
It makes me think about Curtis Martin. I remember he went into the Hall of Fame, and I was always a little suspicious of him as a Hall of Famer. I always thought of Curtis as a very good running back, maybe not quite a great Hall of Fame one, but whatever. I don't mean to mm-hmm. make that the point of the conversation. He was so consistent and did it for so long, such durability. When you guys were debating him, how big of a factor was that in his Hall of Fame credentials?
No, it was. I mean, he was considered good enough to be a Hall of Famer. But again, you have to consider the way that the running backs have gone in this era. Because, I mean, again, back when Curtis was playing, running backs were so valuable. Now they're less valuable because now teams think they can go get a running back, 2 running backs, 3 running backs, and fill in the position, whether it's going to be in the lower rounds or whatever.
or just off the street. And so because of that, you know, it's now tougher for running backs to get honors like that. But in the course of looking at Curtis, I mean, he was a great back for a long period of time, and that was good enough.
Good stuff. John, we will talk tomorrow, getting ready for the weekend. See you then.
All right, sounds good.
All right, there you go. John Clayton, every day at 8:45, the professor. We get our opportunity to hear what's going on in the league. That Deshaun Watson thing is a little nutty. Kind of see where that goes. All right, Linda Cohn is going to join me next, an all-timer, a legend at ESPN SportsCenter, huge hockey fan, going to be out here this weekend, and also hosting between periods, doing all the studio stuff for the NHL on ESPN. Looking forward to Elko next. Don't go anywhere. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.